Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Today we'll look at Uddhava's final meetings with Krishna. His approaching Krishna for instructions. We won't discuss in detail the instructions that Krishna gave to him. That's contained in the bulk of most of the chapters of the 11th canto contain that Uddhava Gita. But just some highlights from that, especially where Uddhava is expressing his gratitude and his devotion to Krishna. These instructions were given just before Krishna left the planet. Uddhava was thus the last devotee that Krishna had an intimate interchange with. And the last thing Krishna did was speak these instructions, practically. And then Dwarka arrived with Krishna's chariot, and Krishna ascended to the spiritual sky. These pastimes are somewhat unusual, even for Uddhava. Uddhava is in mood of servitude, basically. All that servitude is tinged with friendship. It's very intimate. The most intimate kind of servitude is to be the trusted advisor. And Uddhava is not just an ordinary advisor. He's Krishna's constant companion in Dwarka. But when Uddhava, at the end, comes to Krishna to get philosophical instruction, there's some shift in his mood. He becomes even more reverential. He's putting aside his own friendly attitude toward Krishna, his close comradeship with Krishna, and approaching as a disciple. Like Arjuna in the Bhagavad Gita. Arjuna, his sthayi bhava is Sakyaras. He's Krishna's friend in Dwarka. More informal a friend than Uddhava. But when Arjuna was in distress on the battlefield, he asked Krishna, please accept me as your disciple. Nahi papasyami karpanya doshopahata svabhava prachami tvam dharma samudha cheta yatreya shan nischitam bruhitan me shishyasteham shadimam tvam prapannam. My intelligence is bewildered because of my resolution has become weak facing this dilemma of whether I should go ahead and fight, trying to kill my spiritual masters, my teachers, or whether I should abandon the fight and reap all the consequences that come from that. So I don't know what to do. My resolution, therefore, is being shattered. So you tell me what to do, Krishna. Shishyasteham. Now, forget about our friendship. I'm approaching you as a disciple to receive instruction from you. I accept you as spiritual master. Krishna is everyone's spiritual master. He's the spiritual master of the universe, Jagat Guru. So any person, no matter what his sthayi bhava is, can also approach Krishna as spiritual master. So Arjuna does that. Uddhava does that. Arjuna made that choice just before the crucial battle of Kurukshetra, the end of the Kuru's dynasty as it was known, end of an era, beginning of another one. Actually, the age of Kali began while the battle was going on. during those 18 days, the exact moment of the beginning of Kali Yuga came. So certainly a end of an era, beginning of another one, momentous moment. Here's another momentous moment. Krishna's about to leave the planet. Yes? Well, it's an astrological calculation. When all the planets line up in alignment, that's the beginning of Kali Yuga. It's May 12th, 3021 BC, or 3012, I don't know the exact year, BC. And it happened to be right in the middle of Battle of Kurukshetra. Usually there is cataclysm at the end of one age and the beginning of another. It usually doesn't show up in a big way between just yugas, but between the Dwapara Yuga and the Kali Yuga, we have not a partial annihilation of the universe, but the mini-annihilation of the Battle of Kurukshetra. Because Krishna was present on the battlefield, Kali could not show his presence. It was officially his age, but he couldn't do anything. In fact, he tried to do something after the disappearance of the Pandavas, but Parikshit stopped him, or at least subdued him and gave him only a few small spheres of influence. After Parikshit's disappearance, Kali Yuga began in earnest. But technically it began even before Krishna's disappearance. Okay? And now, just before Krishna's disappearance, Uddhava is also putting aside his normal attitude toward Krishna, very confidential companion of Krishna, advisor. He's not coming to give advice, he's coming to get instruction from Krishna. And therefore he's also taking the attitude, now I'm your disciple, you instruct me, I worship you as the supreme spiritual master, not thinking of you as a friend anymore. Uddhava, Arjuna, they're capable of doing this, of becoming disciples. I don't think Nanda Maharaj, Yashoda Mayi, I don't think the gopis could ever take that role. Their intimacy with Krishna is too strongly ingrained. They could never assume a reverential relationship with Krishna. Mother Yashoda was astonished when she saw the universal form in Krishna's abdomen. For a moment, she started to think, oh, I think he's God. But that only lasted for a moment. Immediately, her motherly affection eclipsed that appreciation of Krishna's being God, and she forgot it. And she took Krishna on her lap again, and was concerned about how he's in anxiety. But Uddhava and Arjuna, they're capable of taking the role of disciple. It's part of the mix of their personality. They could appreciate Krishna as a supreme guru. Yogamaya is not preventing them from doing that. So Uddhava approaches Krishna for instructions. When the Yadu boys headed Samba and the other Yadu boys were cursed by the sages, I think Narada was one of the sages, and the dynasty was cursed. Uddhava heard of this, and he saw various evil omens around him. So he approached Krishna in private, not a difficult thing for him to do. He put his head at Krishna's feet, and he asked Krishna, now, this curse has occurred. You're all powerful. You could easily undo the curse just by announcing, the curse is ineffective by my desire. You haven't done that. You're allowing this curse to play out. You've told the Yadus they should go to Prabhas and perform ritual sacrifice to try to counteract the effect of the curse. This also makes no sense. The Yadus are your eternal associates. They're pure devotees. They have no interest in any karmakanda sacrifices. To see you is the highest perfection of life, just to see you and be with you. So why should they leave you and go all the way to Prabhaskshetra to perform some sacrifices? What good will that do? Better they just stay and see your face. So that doesn't make sense. This curse must be something special. Otherwise you could have easily undone it. You must have something in mind. You must be intending to wind up your pastimes. And Uddhava was right. Yeah, he figured it all out. So he requests Krishna, I can't leave you, not even for a moment, but to speak of your going back to your abode and leaving me here for good. You have to take me with you back to the spiritual world. Prabhupada explains in this purport that Uddhava doesn't have any desire for this is not Prabhupada's purport, this is Lama's Gyan, so this is BBT purport. Uddhava doesn't have any intention or any desire for liberation. That's not his motive. But if Krishna's going to stay in this world, Uddhava wants to stay in this world. If Krishna's going to leave, he wants to leave. He wants to leave this world because Krishna's about to leave this world. That's the only reason he wants liberation, or he wants to go back to the spiritual world, to be with Krishna. It's explained, the abodes of the Lord, in the commentary, in the purport to this verse, this is verse 43 of chapter 6, 11th canto we're looking at now. The replicas of the Lord's eternal abodes on the earth are non-different from their originals in the spiritual world. But sometimes, and the pure devotees know this, not just theoretically, but by realization. To them, there's no difference between being with Krishna in the spiritual world or being with him on the earth, in the material manifestation of those abodes. Not material, the manifestation in the material world of those abodes. But still sometimes there may be particular reasons why those devotees want to get out of this world and go back to the spiritual world. Because there, in the spiritual world, they can associate with Krishna constantly. Whereas in the material world, his manifest pastimes are only temporary. And once they're finished, the devotees are left in separation. At least from the visible appearance. So therefore, that's a reason why sometimes Krishna's pure devotees want to get out of this world and go back to Goloka or to Vaikuntha, to be with Krishna all the time. That's what Uddhava is expressing. Of course, Uddhava admits. Yes, I'm sorry. Yes. Yeah. It's described, it's mentioned by Shukadeva Goswami that these cowherd boys, not the gopis, but the cowherd boys, if Krishna was with them in the forest and he would disappear behind a tree for 1 second, they'd be in total anxiety. So, you know, that's at least there's that description. There's more focus by Shukadeva Goswami on the separation of the gopis. But if you can see the cowherd boys, they couldn't even bear that Krishna would be invisible for 1 second behind a tree. So you can extrapolate from that. Yes, it's experienced more deeply in the higher the relationship is, the more intimate the relationship. Now, Uddhava has a very, although his relationship is in the sthayi bhava, the rasa of dasya, servitude, still he's the most perfect devotee in dasya. So his servitude with Krishna is a very intimate one. Therefore the separation he feels in anticipation. This is one kind of separation, anticipating the separation before it happens, and that's what he's experiencing now. It's very intense, because his relationship, even in Dasya Rasa, is very intimate with Krishna. Therefore, to break off that relationship is very painful. Yeah. Yes. Yes. He's a similar case. Mahariputta is the reappearance of Hanuman. Hanuman was also, just like Uddhava, left behind by the Lord. Lord Ramachandra took everyone in Ayodhya back to Vaikuntha with him, except for Hanuman, and Hanuman's still here. He was with Lord Ramachandra for 33,000 years during his pastimes. Then Lord Ramachandra left, and Hanuman is, since then, since 2 million years ago, he's still in the material world, you know, spreading the glories of Lord Ramachandra. Yeah. So that's how much separation he has to experience. Sometimes in disguise? Like a beggar or something?
No.
Sometimes. Sometimes, yep. The feeling, the mood is there. But the Lord is always present. Krishna is always present in the spiritual world. Well, sometimes he seems to go away momentarily. Sometimes Lord Narayan seems to have take a trip outside Vaikuntha. But that's imagination. He never actually leaves Vaikuntha. Anyway, Uddhava also admits, although he's asking Krishna, take me with you, I can't stay here without you. But he does admit that because your pastimes, Krishna, are supremely auspicious, just by hearing about those pastimes, people become satisfied. They give up all desires for everything else. It really is adequate to console the devotee who is separated from the Lord, just to remember him and to be able to hear about his pastimes. But so if that means also that if a devotee who simply hears about you becomes so attached to you and can't give up your devotional service, what to speak of me? I was with you as your constant companion for so many years. How can I be expected to be able to give up your association? Just by having the privilege of getting your remnants, the food you ate, the garlands you wore, bits and pieces of clothing that you wore, by these little tokens, this prasad, I have been able to easily conquer all the influences of the material energy, just by accepting your prasadam. So sages work very hard to achieve Brahman. They undergo severe austerities and practice very strict sadhana. But we, your devotees, have been able to transcend, conquer Maya, to cross beyond all darkness, just by talking about it and hearing and remembering your pastimes and taking your prasad. So here, it's pointed out in the commentary purport to text 47-49, that Uddhava is presenting himself as a conditioned soul. It doesn't mean he is. Throughout this conversation between Krishna and Uddhava that makes up the Uddhava Gita, Uddhava is presenting himself as a fallen conditioned soul. But he isn't. It's not, we've seen him as perfect liberated soul, a person fit to do the most intimate service of Krishna. How is it all of a sudden he becomes a conditioned soul? It's just his humility. This is his attitude, but we can't accept this as true. But even though he's saying, even though I am a conditioned soul, I have all confidence that by continuing to engage in hearing and chanting about you, I'll get liberation eventually. Then Krishna replies to these statements by Uddhava. And Krishna gives Uddhava the specific empowerment to preach. Krishna has empowered throughout the years Uddhava to do many services, to act as a messenger to the Brijbasis. Who can do that? You know, only the most competent devotee can carry Krishna's message, not just carry it, but deliver it in such an expert way as to safeguard the life and the sanity of the Vrijabhasis. Uddhava was empowered by Krishna to do that. Uddhava was empowered by Krishna to give confidential advice on so many important matters, and to serve Krishna personally in so many ways. But now he's receiving the most exclusive empowerment, the most rare empowerment, the empowerment to effectively preach Krishna's glories. This Krishna gives only at the end. And this is the, in this reply by Krishna, Krishna gives the special empowerment to Uddhava to become the Acharya and take responsibility for spreading Krishna's glories. Krishna admits to Uddhava that yes, he is about to leave this world. And then Kali, Krishna says, is going to take over. The earth will become bereft of all piety very quickly. So you, O Uddhava, you should not plan on remaining here very long, even though I'm giving you an assignment to do something here. It's a double entendre in this statement. Here can mean Dwarka. You better get out of Dwarka very fast. Yeah, destruction is coming in a few days. But it also means, Uddhava, don't stay in the material world too long. Seems like a contradictory instruction. I'm asking you, Uddhava, to stay here, and I'm warning you to leave. But do the assignment I give you, and then you can leave. But I want you to do some preaching, especially to the sages at Naimisharanya, one place where Krishna has not gone. They are devotees. Narada Muni lives there. The worshippers of Naranarayan live there. Great sages. But their devotion is mixed with jnana and attachment to austerities. If you want to perform austerities, go to Bhadravik Ashram. Yeah. That's an austere place. In June, it goes down to 10 degrees at night, almost freezing. What to speak of, during the winter months, human beings can barely live there at all. Therefore, there are many devotees there whose devotion is mixed with motivation of jnana, desire for liberation, attachment to austerities. Uddhava, you're the good person to go and preach to them. You're also a great scholar. You can deal with the jnanis on their own terms and convert them to my pure devotees. So please, finish up this, take care of this unfinished business of mine and go to Bhadravik Ashram. But I promise you that you will not be bereft of my association for one moment. And you will never be affected by Maya. You already have that power. And that power, you will never lose that power to be completely unaffected by the influence of the three modes. So Krishna gives his empowerment. Uddhava, you should remain in this world to spread my glories and to teach the science of devotional service. And then he gives us some instructions that may seem like instructions that a jnani would give to his disciple. Give up all attachment, fix your mind on the Lord, be satisfied everywhere, understand the world is temporary, creation of Maya, control your mind and senses, so on. Considering that Uddhava, who Uddhava is, there must be a secret message in this, just like when Krishna told the gopis the same thing, realize me as the super soul. It really was indicating in a subtle way that because of their intense conjugal connection, the gopis are able to see Krishna everywhere, just like the yogis see the super soul everywhere. On the basis of madhurya, rasa, not on the basis of brahma jnana. Same thing with Uddhava. He tells Uddhava, So you should see me in everything. So the way that a pure devotee on that level of Uddhava or the gopis sees Krishna in everything is very much different from the way that a mere yogi or a jnani sees Krishna in everything. Not Krishna as the super soul, but Krishna as the dearest friend. Yam shama sundaram achintya gunaswarupam. What is it? Premanjana bhakti churitavilochenina santak sadaiva vidyeshu vilokayanti. Lord Brahma is also a jnani, but he can understand the devotion of the Vrajavasis. He went to Vrindavan, he saw. Then he made his apology and left. Let me go back to Brahmaloka. If I stay here any longer, I'll just commit more offenses. But he understood. He saw it, and he could understand how the devotion of Vrajavasis is greater than his own devotion. And he was able to describe in the Brahma Samhita how... How Premanjana Purita Bhakti Vilojanena, those whose eyes are smeared with the ointment of Prema. In other words, those who have Prema. That's what Prema does. It changes your consciousness. It changes your vision. It changes how you see everything. It changes your whole attitude on life when you have love of God. You can tell someone who has love of God by their attitude toward the world. If you have the insight to measure that, that's how you measure. So those whose eyes are smeared with that ointment of love of God, they see not Paramatma in every heart, in every atom, but they see Shyamasundara, Krishna. Difference not just that he's got two arms instead of four, and is holding a flute instead of a disc and a club, but that he's engaging in intimate relationships with his devotees. Not just letting everybody worship him as God or meditate on him as a super soul. So, this was Krishna's last instructions. Not quite last instructions. This would have been Krishna's last instructions to Uddhava. But Uddhava asks for more. Uddhava responds that I am very inquisitive to actually understand you more deeply. So I'm not, thank you for your instructions, but I'm asking you for some more instructions. I want to understand you more deeply. You told me about sannyas, in effect, how to renounce this world and get ready to leave it. But materialistic non-devotees like me, Uddhava says, cannot easily practice this. You really have to make it simpler and explain it more clearly for me. I'm absorbed in egoistic attachment. I'm on the mental platform. You have to tell me more clearly, how can I actually carry out these instructions you've given me? You're the Supreme Lord. You reveal yourself to your pure devotees. You're the only one who can explain to me perfect knowledge about yourself. I'm weary of my material life, and therefore I surrender to you as your disciple. This is how Krishna was approached by Uddhava for instruction. After Krishna had already given him everything, had empowered him to preach, but Uddhava wanted to take the opportunity to hear something from Krishna's mouth. Of course, that's for our benefit. This is recorded in Srimad Bhagavatam, and we can study this Uddhava Gita. Mayavadis read it, and they twist some impersonal Advaita Vad out of it. But actually, just like in Bhagavad Gita, in Uddhava Gita, Krishna is giving the most confidential instructions about how to serve him and how to learn to love him. And according to Sanatana Goswami, there are many things mentioned, described in the Uddhava Gita that are not even told in the Bhagavad Gita. Yes? Well, we have our commentaries. Of the two Gitas? No, maybe it would be a tr we don't want to make the Bhagavad Gita look bad by give you a detailed explanation how the Uddhava Gita is better than it. It's they're different. They serve different purposes. The Uddhava Gita is a little too much, to give everybody as a preliminary textbook on devotional service. It's twice as long as the Bhagavad Gita, and it deals with things on a more advanced level. So therefore, Bhagavad Gita is the ideal book for beginning Krishna consciousness. Uddhava Gita has its place in the 11th canto. Those who are studying Bhagavatam, when they get to the 11th canto, they'll study it. And our commentators, Sridhar Swami, Jiva Goswami, Vishnu Chakravarti, they've given their explanations, deep explanations of the Uddhava Gita. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati has his Bengali comments, detailed comments on it. But always in the context of the Bhagavatam. Uddhava Gita, usually the Mayavadis like to separate it out and deal with it separately. And they take it out of the context of the whole presentation of the Bhagavatam and make a Mayavadi philosophy out of it. But we leave it in the 11th canto and see it as part of the overall course of instruction given in Srimad Bhagavatam. Bhagavatam is both Krishna Katha spoken by Krishna and Krishna Katha that's directly and indirectly about Krishna. 10th canto is directly about Krishna. The other cantos are in different ways indirectly about Krishna, about his avatars, about his devotees, and so on. Okay. So then we also read from the 19th and 29th chapters of the 11th canto, just some excerpts from the Uddhava Gita. One point in the 19th chapter is verses 8 to 10. Uddhava asks for an explanation about jnana and bhakti yoga. There are various places where Uddhava asks questions and then Krishna gives his answers throughout the Uddhava Gita. Here, Uddhava is asking that I want to hear about special kind of jnana, special kind of knowledge. Of course, not material knowledge, but not the ordinary generic knowledge, spiritual knowledge given in the Upanishads. I want to know that kind of knowledge which describes loving service to you. Since I'm suffering in the material world, but I see no other shelter but you, Krishna. So I just want to know about you. So because Uddhava is so intelligent, Krishna encourages him to pursue this line of asking for instructions on philosophical knowledge. But that knowledge is knowledge leading to pure bhakti. Uddhava says to Krishna, "Please be merciful on this fallen soul and pour down the nectar of your instructions." Then Uddhava asks, oh, this is later on, 10 chapters later, chapter 29, one of the last chapters of the Uddhava Gita. Uddhava asks specifically about, "Please tell me about bhakti yoga, about the science of devotional service. You've explained various kinds of yoga, but this is really too hard to practice for people who can't control their minds. Can you tell me how to do all this more easily?" Actually, yogis, they try hard, but they're generally frustrated trying to control their minds. What to speak of ordinary people? So swan-like men, the Paramahamsas, they take shelter of your lotus feet. That's the cause of their success. They don't try to succeed on their own strength. They simply take shelter. Other yogis and karmis who don't do that, who don't take shelter of your lotus feet, they're all defeated by Maya. This is understood by the Sri Vaishnavas, who their explanation is that bhakti yoga, as practiced in ancient times, is actually quite a difficult process. And in Kali Yuga, it's not practicable. Bhakti yoga. Therefore, in bhakti yoga, the only practice is prapatti, taking shelter. And if we can hear and chant something about Krishna and do a little service, okay. But the whole regulated practice of bhakti yoga is too difficult for Kali Yuga. We just take shelter of Krishna's lotus feet, and that's the basis of our success. Uddhava says, you give your intimate association not to the jnanis, but to your surrendered devotees. Just like Brahma and the demigods came to worship Lord Ramachandra, but who did he give his attention to? To the monkeys. Instead. Who can reject you? Because you give everything to your devotees. What devotee could ever abandon you? And what do your servants lack? They have everything they need. Even the greatest poets can't express their gratitude to you. But it's a very famous verse. Let me read the verse. 11:29-6. There's several verses in here that are quoted by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu that Prabhupada quotes also, spoken by Uddhava at the end of the Uddhava Gita. This one. Naivo payantya pachitim kavayastavesha brahmayushapi kritam ridham mudak smarantaha yontar bahistanubritam asubham vidunvan acharya chaitya vapusha swagatim vyanakti. Oh my Lord, transcendental poets and experts in spiritual science could not fully express their indebtedness to you, even if they were endowed with the prolonged lifetime of Brahma. For you appear in two features, externally as the Acharya and internally as the Supersoul, to deliver the embodied living being by directing him how to come to you. Very beautiful statements by Uddhava. And then Krishna, in response, tells Uddhava, wraps up the Uddhava Gita and tells Uddhava, please go to Bhadrakashram. This is my request. This is my assignment to you. He asks Uddhava, have you understood everything I've told you? Is your confusion gone now? And Uddhava says, yes, I was fallen into darkness, but now all my ignorance is dispelled, thanks to your association. My act of surrendering to you was a very insignificant thing, no great feat. But because of that, in response to that, you've given me the torchlight of transcendental knowledge. What grateful devotee can give you up and take shelter of any other master? Now, my rope of affection for the Dasharhas, the Vrishnis, and all the others, that rope is cut. What I want to know, my last question is, how can I have undeviating attachment for your lotus feet? And Krishna answers, just carry out my instructions. Prabhupada explained in the third canto, in the purport, that by carrying out the Lord's order, one is never separated from him. This is the last resort for someone who is suffering in separation from Krishna. Be blessed that you have some service to do for Krishna. Accept that as a blessing. Carry out your service. That is your connection with Krishna. So Krishna is telling Uddhava, go to Bhadrakashram. Purify yourself by taking bath in the Alakananda River. You can wear tree bark and eat the fruits and roots that are available in the forest. Give up all desire for material happiness. Tolerate all dualities. Be full of knowledge and realization. Think about everything I've taught you. Absorb your mind in me, and then you will transcend the three modes and come back to me. That was Krishna's last instruction to Uddhava. Uddhava circumambulated Krishna, fell at his feet. He couldn't bear to leave Krishna, but the order was there. He had to obey it. So he put Krishna's slippers on his head and left to go to Bhadrakashram. There he went. It's described at the end of this 29th chapter of the 11th canto that Uddhava in Bhadrakashram performed his tapas, carried out Krishna's order, and eventually he went back to Goloka Dwarka. where he's an eternal associate of Krishna. Anyway, that's how Uddhava got his final instructions from Krishna and left this material world. But not, we still have a little bit more to say about him. Well, first of all, let me read from the few pages from Brihad Bhagavatamrita describing Uddhava in the spiritual world, Uddhava in Goloka. We already read something about that from chapter 5, continuing in chapter 5 of the second part. When Gopakumar arrived in Dwarka of the spiritual world, after graduating from Vaikuntha, he moved on to Dwarka, Goloka Dwarka. And there he saw Krishna, the Lord of the Yadus, surrounded by his associates and his servants. And this is a description of the scene. Okay, I won't read the Sanskrit verses, just the English. Sri Garuda stood in front, glorifying Krishna with prayers. And Uddhava massaged his lotus feet. This is the scene in Goloka. And pleased the Lord with affectionate, intimate remarks. Commentary. Uddhava, as Krishna's dearest friend in Dwarka, has the privilege of massaging the Lord's feet in the Sudharma assembly hall. This is his eternal service. Being so close to the Lord, he can say things that others present should not overhear. Uddhava is also a disciple of Brihaspati, the master of speech. As such, so he's, even in Goloka, he's Brihaspati's disciple. As such, Uddhava is a perfect scholar and Krishna's favorite advisor. Even if someone were to stand close enough to hear what Uddhava was telling Krishna, Uddhava's speech was so circumspect that its confidential gist was incomprehensible. You understand? You know, someone, even if they heard what he was saying, they wouldn't understand what he was saying. And the Lord Uddhava was speaking to, moreover, was Nijeshwaram, is the word in the verse, the supreme controller. Despite having submitted himself to Uddhava's influence, what to speak of being most skilled in the arts of communication? So Krishna accepted Uddhava's advice, but don't forget that he's actually the supreme lord of everything. Seeing from a distance, this is Gopakumar talking about what he experienced. Seeing from a distance the goal I had long desired to see, Krishna, I fell down unconscious from the burden of my love. The Lord, who was brimming with the exalted rasa of affection, told Uddhava to bring me close. Uddhava quickly came forward, delighted to see me in the dress of a cowherd boy. He carefully lifted me from the ground, brought me back to full awareness, and with both his hands led me to the Lord's side. Commentary. Due to his special attachment to the residents of Gokula, Uddhava immediately recognized Gopakumar's dress. Uddhava quickly left his service of massaging Krishna's feet to carry out Krishna's order. With the desire to lift me up and draw me to his side, Lord Krishna placed his feet close to me, and Uddhava, with his own hand, forcibly touched my head to those lotus feet. The Lord of my life then touched me with his lotus hand, as if to cleanse each of my limbs. He took the flute from my hand, looked at it, and apparently distressed, remained silent, shedding tears. Hare Krishna. Krishna can't play his flute in Dwarka. It doesn't fit. The next moment he asked, "Are you well? Is your health good? I hope that the place you came from is free from inauspicious influences." While speaking in this way, Krishna again began to feel distressed, and Uddhava had to calm him. See, Uddhava is playing an important role in Goloka, keeping Krishna under control. He doesn't lose his lose himself in his ecstasies. Commentary. As soon as Uddhava saw ecstatic symptoms, such as tears and choking of the voice, appear in Krishna's body, he took steps to pacify the Lord. Krishna's agitation was caused by the questions he had asked about the situation in Gopakumar's hometown, namely Govardhan. Strictly speaking, inauspicious forces cannot enter the Dwarka of Vaikuntha, where Gopakumar was present. They can enter only the Vrindavan and Dwarka on earth. But Sri Krishna is always in the mood of his abodes on the earth, which are ultimately identical with his abodes in the spiritual sky. There is no inauspiciousness in Vaikuntha. They're in Vaikuntha now. But Krishna is in the mood of Gokula on the earth while he's in Vaikuntha. Sri Narada will later elaborate on this esoteric truth. With a gesture, Uddhava pointed out to Krishna various princes of the Yadava dynasty who were sitting there, along with Vasudeva and many kings, demigods, and sages present in the assembly. This is in the Sudharma assembly hall. Commentary. By moving his eyebrows, Uddhava reminded Krishna that they were in the presence not only of Vasudeva and the other Yadus, but also kings like Yudhishthir, demigods like Indra, and sages like Gargacharya. So, you know, Krishna shouldn't act so, lose control of his emotions in front of all his elders like this. As we have understood from the philosophical explanation of Narada, the kings, demigods, and sages present are all eternal associates of the Lord, who reside in Dwarka within the realm of Vaikuntha to enhance the Lord's enjoyment of his pastimes, just as they reside in the Dwarka on the earth. Later, Gopakumar will see many of them again when he reaches Goloka. The Lord opened his lotus eyes and glanced at those before him. With difficulty, he calmed himself somewhat and then got up to enter his inner quarters. Because I had now attained the Lord of my life, whom I had hankered for so long, I was immersed in an ocean of joy. I had no idea what to say or what to do. The Lord honored the exiting chiefs of the Yadus with items such as pan and sandalwood paste. Holding my joined palms in his right hand, he, along with Balaram and Uddhava, entered the inner palace. Now we're jumping ahead to about 30 verses ahead. Just as the one personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna, exists in many forms and in many places, So we also, his servants, exist in many forms. I think this is Narada Muni speaking. All of us, those led by Sri Garuda and others led by Sriman Hanuman, our friend Uddhava, these Yadavas and others are like that. That means Krishna has many expanded forms in different places. Narayan in Vaikuntha is an expansion of Krishna in Goloka. And then he has his incarnations on the earth. Krishna's principal associates also expand. Uddhava is one of them. Commentary. Garuda and others like Shesha are associates of the Lord in Vaikuntha. Hanuman, Jambavan, and others are servants of Lord Ramachandra. Hanuman simultaneously sings the glories of Ram in the Kimpurusha Loka of Burloka region and in the Ayodhya of Vaikuntha. So Hanuman is present in Ayodhya and Vaikuntha. He's currently present also on Kimpurusha Loka on the earth, in the Burloka system, in the material world. He expands. He has his expansion in the material world. Uddhava, whom Gopakumara can see right before him in Vaikuntha, Goloka, Dwarka, is simultaneously one of the principal companions of Krishna in Dwarka on the earth, along with the Yadavas and others, such as the Pandavas. Considering the topic too confidential to bring up just now, Narada chose not to mention Krishna's devotees in Vrindavan, because it caused too much havoc to talk about that in Dwarka. Yes?
There's no palace.
there are some cows. But I don't know. I mean, Planico Loco has three parts. Yeah. And Dwarka, Mathura, and Vrindavan. The Vrindavan is the major part of it. And Mathura is on the outskirts, and Dwarka is a precinct of Mathura. So it's mainly the planet of the cows. There's some parts where there aren't cows. Yeah. In Mathura city, there aren't so many cows. They're mostly out in the country. So in the city, you don't see as many cows. But the city is still part of Goloka, the Mathura and Dwarka part. It's just a poetic usage that you designate something according to what's the prominent part of it. The Brahmins are coming. Well, maybe in that crowd of Brahmins there are a few people who aren't Brahmins, but still you say the Brahmins are coming. You know, so like that. This is the planet of the cows, even though there's some small part of it where there's no cows or very few cows. And relatively speaking, Mathura and Dwarka are just a small part of Goloka. Go has other meanings besides cow also. Go is all the senses. Go is the earth. Yeah, so Krishna is Govinda because he's the Rishikesh, the proprietor of everybody's senses. Not only cows. Okay. Now, we leave Uddhava in Goloka. Uddhava is still present on the earth in his invisible form. In his visible pastimes, he went to Padavik Ashram. I don't know the story, how long he spent there. It said that eventually he went back to the spiritual world. Regained his position as eternal associate of Krishna in Dwarka. But in the Aprakrita, invisible pastimes of Krishna, and in Uddhava's own invisible form, he's still present on the earth, still now. He's eternally present. We'll read about that now. In the Bhagavat Mahatmya, four chapters that are contained in the Skanda Purana, Vaishnava Kanda. Has anybody read this yet? Can you show your hands? Anybody has started to read these chapters yet? No? Okay, good. So I'll read them. In fact, you don't have to bother to read them at home. We'll just read them in the class today and tomorrow. Tomorrow's the last day, yes. So this is what we have to cover today and tomorrow, is this Bhagavat Mahatmya. We may skip over some of the verses, and then you do have it printed out so you can take it with you and study it later, but you don't have to read it at home, because we'll read it in class. If you want to, you can read it, but you don't have to. The Skanda Purana is one of the six Puranas that are in the mode of ignorance. It's also the longest of all the Puranas. It's 88,000 verses. Bhagavatam is only 18,000, so it's five times bigger than the Bhagavatam. And it contains a lot of tamasic, things of tamasic interest. You can read descriptions of over 1,024 different Shiva lingas and their how they were established, who worships them, if that's what you're interested in, and about various demons killed by Durga, and so on. But the Skanda Purana also contains this small Vaishnava Kanda and other sections that describe Krishna's pure devotional service. But there's this one section called the Vaishnava Kanda, and it's only four chapters, and all it contains is this Bhagavat Mahatmya, narrated by, as all the Puranas are, narrated by Suta Goswami to the sages at Naimisharanya. There's another Bhagavat Mahatmya contained in the Padma Purana. It's five chapters long. But this is also very famous. There are other translations of it, but I did my own translation. It's unedited, so there's some mistakes in it. typos and grammatical mistakes. Okay, chapter one. I guess I'll just read the English. Vyasa said, "We offer our respects again and again to Lord Krishna, so that we may achieve the transcendental taste of his devotional service. He is the splendid, full embodiment of eternity, knowledge, and bliss, raining down upon us unlimited joy. He is the cause of the universe's creation, maintenance, and withdrawal." So any Shaktas or Shaivites who are reading the Skanda Purana, when they get to this, they'll see that this is Vaishnav section. This is, you know, intended just to glorify Krishna. Then it's stated that at Naimasharanya, the sages, expert in tasting the nectarian juice of divine topics, greeted wise Sutta, who was sitting before them, and spoke to him. The sages said, "After the king installed Vajra on the throne in Sri Mathura district, and his own grandson in Hastinapura, how did these two fare, and what did they do?" Of course, the king is Yudhishthir. Yudhishthira, when he had learned that Krishna and the Yadus had left the world, he decided no need for him to stay any longer. So he took off all his jewelry and intended to just leave and march north with the hope of entering heaven in his self-same body. You follow the path up the Himalayas, and you can, if you're absolutely pure, you can go to heaven without changing your body. Yes? Heaven? Swargaloka, yeah. In the Mahabharata, that's the description, that he wanted to go to heaven.
Yeah.
We discussed that the other day, is that, you know, the Mahabharata is written, the Mahabharata that we have is written to appeal to more materialistic people. The pure devotional service is not very much openly glorified. It's there. The Bhagavad Gita is there. Other places in the Mahabharata, Krishna, the glorification of Krishna is properly presented. But mostly Krishna stays in the background. And you don't hear anything about going to Vaikuntha. You hear a lot about the glories of heaven in the Mahabharata. It's for people who want that. Attain heaven, yeah. Anyway, that's the external appearance of the pastimes of the Pandavas. The Bhagavatam describes the more confidential life of the Pandavas. Just like someone may appear like a materialist to ordinary people, but his friends know that he's really a Vaishnav. Like that. Sometimes devotees have to behave like materialists just to hold on to a job and, you know, live with non-devotees. They act like non-devotees. So like that, the Pandavas were acting like materialists in the association of materialists. But they had their private life in which they pure devotees of Krishna. Anyway, Yudhishthir, you know, and after Krishna left the world, decided he's going to leave the world. But before doing that, he arranged that the government would be maintained. He installed Parikshit on the throne in Hastinapur, his own grandson, Arjuna's son. And also he installed Krishna's great-grandson, Vajranaba, as the king of Mathura. This is described in the 15th chapter of the first canto of the Bhagavatam. Vajranaba is Aniruddha's son. Aniruddha is Krishna's grandson, and Vajranaba is Aniruddha's son. That means that Vajranaba saw Krishna as a child. Before Krishna's disappearance, you know, Krishna was still present. But he was left behind, yes? Then Vajranaba is his long name. Vajra is the name for the same person. The Vajra that we're talking about here is Vajranaba, Aniruddha's son. So he was appointed king of Mathura, and he was left behind. When the Pandavas left this world, he and Parikshit were left to rule the Kuru kingdom. That makes Parikshit the emperor and Vajranapa his vassal, his subordinate king. Okay, so the sages, supposedly, headed by Shonaka, ask Sutta, what did these two kings do? How did they do okay, and what did they do? Sutta Uvacha. Sutta said, before reciting this narration, which is the very means of conquest, we should offer our respectful obeisances unto the personality of Godhead Narayan, unto Nara Narayan Rishi, the supermost human being, unto Mother Saraswati, the goddess of learning, and to Srila Vyasadeva. Narayanam namaskritya naram chaiva narottamam devim saraswatim vyasam tato joyamudhirayet. When the king, this is King Yudhisthira, had left for the final journey, O Brahmana, the lord of the earth, Parikshit, went to Mathura to visit Vajranaba. Learning that his uncle had come, Vajra was overcome with loving affection. He came forward, greeted Parikshit, and brought him to his residence. Arriving at the palace, do some editing on the fly as we're reading. Arriving at the palace, the hero, who always thought only of Krishna, Parikshit embraced Vajra, and offered obeisances to Rohini and the other wives of Krishna. Before leaving this world, Krishna asked Arjuna to take care of his queens. Arjuna meant to escort them to Hastinapur, where they could be put under the care of the Pandavas. But Krishna himself came in the disguise, and some of his associates came in the disguise of gopas and attacked Arjuna on the road. Arjuna, all of his powers disappeared and he couldn't beat these cowherds, and the queens were kidnapped, actually by Krishna himself. And then Krishna escorted them to Mathura and left them in the care of Vajranaba. Okay. And that's how the queens are doing there in Mathura. Okay, you got that? Okay. So Parikshit came visiting, he embraced Vajra, offered obeisances to Rohini and to the queens of Krishna. I see. Rohini is not Balaram's mother, but one of Krishna's wives, a different Rohini here. Okay. They showed all honor to King Parikshit. When he had taken rest was comfortably seated, Parikshit spoke to Vajranaba. Sri Parikshit Uvacha. Sri Parikshit said, dear boy, your forefathers certainly delivered my father, that's Abhimanyu, and grandfathers, the Pandavas, from many terrible miseries, and they also saved me. This means the forefathers of Vajranaba are Aniruddha, Pradyumna, Krishna, and Krishna's other sons and grandsons, the Vrishnis. There is, Parikshit continued to say, is Parikshit talking yet? There is nothing I can do properly to repay you, dear boy. So, my child, I request you to make yourself at ease in your kingdom. You shouldn't worry at all about your treasury, army, and so on, or about subduing enemies and other problems. Just take good care of your mothers. This is all the queens of Krishna. Leave all your responsibilities to me and forget all your anxieties. Parikshit's telling Vajranaba. Hearing this, Vajra was extremely gratified and replied. Sri Vajranaba said, O King, it is very appropriate for you to speak like this to me. I was also shown kindness by your father. Abhimanyu. Yeah. When he gave me knowledge of the science of weapons. So Abhimanyu taught Vajranaba how to fight. For that reason, I have not the slightest anxiety. and I have acquired a solid grasp on the skills of a Kshatriya. But I have one great worry about which you should please give your opinion. Anybody without looking knows what that anxiety is? Okay, we'll find out. Although I have been installed as the king of Mathura district, I am now sitting in a vacant forest. Where have all the citizens of the district gone? Only when citizens are present is ruling a pleasant task. What happened is when Krishna left Mathura to go to Dwarka, he took all the Mathura Vasis with him. Mathura was left empty. And when Krishna left the world, whoever was left in Vraja district just either left this world or just wandered off somewhere. The place was left desolate. There was nobody left except for a few monkeys and a few Brahmins sitting in Mathura city. Well, they came later. Okay, they came because Vajranava was sent there. And then the queens arrived to be taken care of by Vajranava. But there wasn't anybody, there were no citizens. Told this, to dispel Vajranava's doubt, Vishnurata, Parikshit, at once sent for Shandilya, the priest of Nanda Maharaj and the other cowherds. Shandilya Rishi, I guess, was living nearby in Mathura district. He's the author of the Shandilya Bhakti Sutras, great sage who's an expert on the science of devotional service. And the priest of Nanda Maharaj, it says. So Shandilya quickly left his hut and came to Mathura. Vajranava worshipped him and accommodated him on an excellent seat. Vishnurata Parikshit quickly summarized the question, and the sage, highly satisfied, addressed the two kings to settle their doubt. Sri Shandilya said, both of you listen with fixed attention and hear from me a secret about Vrajabhumi. Because the word Vrajana in Sanskrit means expanding, Vraja gets its name, the district Vraja, Vrajabhumi, gets its name from the idea of being all-expansive. The all-pervasive absolute truth beyond the material modes is called Vraja. It is purely blissful, the supreme light, the inexhaustible abode of the liberated souls. So the absolute truth himself, he's called Vraja, and therefore his abode is called Vraja. There the sun, in that place, the son of Nanda, Krishna, his body and all its limbs purely blissful, the self-satisfied Lord, whose desires are always fulfilled, is perceived by those who are endowed with prema. This is Shandilya Rishi explaining. Radhika is his own self. Wise sages know the confidential essence, who know the confidential essence of the Vedas, call him self-satisfied because he takes pleasure in her company. So it's not Krishna's Atmarama, but it doesn't mean he's some sage who just meditates on his navel. But Radhika is his own self, and he takes his pleasure in her company. Because his desired enjoyments, his cows, his cowherd men and women, and his pastimes are eternally present, thus it is said that his desires are always fulfilled. Aptakama. Yes? Repeat? Yeah. Well, there's two things. It says he's Atmarama and he's Aptakama. You know, it's usually a description of a sage who was satisfied in himself and all his desires are fulfilled. But in Krishna's case, it means that he's enjoying with his pleasure potency, who is his own self, and he has his eternal entourage. So therefore, his desires are always fulfilled. The things that he wants to associate with his cows, with his devotees, and have his pastimes, they're eternally going on. So therefore, he's Aptakama. All his desires are always fulfilled. Okay. The confidential truth about him is described as being beyond the realm of matter. Others perceive the other kinds of pastimes he has when he plays with the material nature. So Krishna has his spiritual pastimes and his material pastimes. Chandilya is explaining this philosophy here. In these other pastimes, the material pastimes, the universe is created, maintained, and destroyed by the modes of passion, goodness, passion, and ignorance. Thus he has two kinds of pastimes, the real and the mundane. The real pastimes are known properly only by himself and his intimate devotees, while the common jivas can know his mundane pastimes. Now, Chandilya is talking about actually two different things at the same time. He's talking about the difference between Krishna's material and spiritual energies. But there's a more confidential meaning of this, that he's talking about the difference between Krishna's visible pastimes and his invisible pastimes. That everybody, when they're publicly manifest, for that duration, everybody can see his visible pastimes. But only Krishna himself and a few selected devotees can see his invisible pastimes. So we have to read below the surface to see that second message here.
It seems to say that there are two types of jivas, common jivas and
special devotees. Yeah. They're not a different kind of, they're not a different species, but the devotees are special because of their love. Any jiva can become also a lover of Krishna. That's the potential, but the devotees have realized that potential. Yeah, two different kinds of jivas, the devotees and the non-devotees, or the intimate devotees and everybody else. The second kind of pastime cannot occur separate from the first. That means the material pastimes can't exist separately from the spiritual pastimes. The material world is just an expansion of the spiritual world. Or, looking at it the other way, it's the invisible pastimes that are the basis, the eternal. And the material and the visible pastimes are just a replica, a manifestation of his eternal pastimes. The second kind cannot occur separate from the first, nor can it ever enter the realm of the first. But both of you can see, both you, Parikshit and Vajra, can see his mundane pastimes in which the earth and the other worlds have appeared, and on the earth, the district of Mathura. In this district is a land of Vraja, where the factual truth is well hidden. It is visible to those who are full of pure love, and occasionally it is visible to everyone. The absolute truth in Vraja, in Vrindavan, is well hidden. Only a few people can see it all the time. And there's a short time in every day of Brahma when everybody can see it. Sometimes at the end of the Dwapara age, the devotees who are fit to participate in his confidential pastimes gather together here at Vraja on the earth, as they have done just recently. And then the Lord himself, Krishna, appears. To be with his dear devotee, Krishna descends among them. Demigods and others whose help is wanted also descend in various places. Fulfilling the desires of all of them, Lord Hari has now disappeared. It can be concluded without a doubt, therefore, that three different kinds of people have been placed here in Vraja in the past. That's where they're sitting. They're sitting in Mathura talking. So this place, there have been three kinds of devotees in the past, put here by Krishna. Yes? Krishna decided he could leave this world because he has assured the perfection of all of his devotees. You know, every one of his devotees on the earth has attained the love of God and their complete potential. And it's described in the purport to the 11th canto somewhere that even devotees who are not born yet, Krishna has arranged for their perfection by the pastimes he's displayed and the way they've been recorded in the Bhagavatam and the Bhagavad Gita. Having accomplished all that, that all his devotees now and in the future are guaranteed perfection, Krishna felt, okay, now I can leave. I've done everything I need to do. Okay? So three different kinds of devotees have been put here in the past in this Vrajadham on the earth. These are categorized as, one, the eternal devotees, two, those who want the same status, who want to become eternal devotees, and three, other persons, like demigods. Among them, the demigods and other ordinary people, Krishna has previously already dispatched, sent back to Dwarka. Later, after sending them to Dwarka, because Krishna left Vrindavan and went to Dwarka, then he later sent them back to their assigned responsibilities. The demigods went back to the heavenly planets by the device of the pastime of the fight with the clubs. Krishna then blessed those who desired to also have spiritual identities, the second category, who want to become eternal associates, bestowing on them forms of pure blissful prema and arranging for them to join the company of his eternal devotees. So Krishna, before leaving this world, saw to it that those who want to become eternal devotees got that opportunity. At that time, all his eternal devotees became invisible to the unqualified. When Krishna left, all the eternal devotees also became invisible. They're still there in the invisible pastime, but they all disappeared from our sight at the time of Krishna's disappearance. Yes? Yeah? Well, there's two different things that are talked about here, two different levels. One level is that the spiritual world is only known by Krishna and his devotees, and materialists know the material world. But we're also talking on a different level about his visible and invisible pastimes. Invisible pastimes, only a few specially blessed devotees can see his eternal pastimes in invisible form. And when Krishna is here, then everybody can see his visible pastimes. Everybody who's here at that, in the right time, in the right place, no matter who they are, can see Krishna's invisible pastimes. You just have to be, in Mathura at the time of Krishna's appearance, that's all. And then you get to see, even if you're a demon or a materialist. Krishna has to choose you. Jiva Goswami explains in the Bhakti Sandarbha that even devotees who are fully qualified, who have pure love of Krishna, pure prema, Krishna can still refuse to show his invisible pastimes while they're still on the earth, to intensify their love and to make them experience deeply viraha bhava, separation. He may give them a glimpse once or twice, but otherwise in many cases he withholds even from devotees who are fully fit and qualified, but he doesn't let them see. And then when they leave this world, then they enter eternally. So only a few devotees get to see Krishna's invisible pastimes while still on the earth. And you can be qualified and still Krishna can choose not to let you see it. Yes? Can he unqualify? They can get glimpses, especially. Anybody, Krishna can give a glimpse of it to anybody. So if you get a glimpse, don't think that you're perfect. Yeah, that's a pitfall that happens to some. Okay. So what happens? Krishna sends everybody back to where they belong. The eternal associates don't have to go anywhere. They're Krishna's eternal associates. They remain here in Krishna's invisible pastimes eternally, but they become invisible to ordinary eyes at the moment of Krishna's disappearance. Everybody disappears. That's why the place looks empty. Yeah? That's the explanation why King Vajra is sitting there with no citizens. Because the perfect devotees have become invisible. And the imperfect devotees have been sent elsewhere.
But he's not qualified, he's not on the same platform, so he can't rule in that invisible kingdom.
He's not qualified to
rule in an invisible kingdom.
It's no fun. Yeah. He can sit there, but it's, there's no enjoyment in ruling a kingdom with no citizens.
No, but they are.
I'm sorry.
There.
Yes?
They are there in the invisible
Well, the pure devotees are. You know, the eternal associates. They don't need to be ruled. They don't need a king. Yeah. Okay, anyway, continuing. Because there are thus remain no participants for earthly pastimes, people who have since come here see this whole place devoid of population. Okay. So you have no cause for anxiety, Vajranabha. Take my order to establish many villages here, and your complete success will be assured. This is Shandilya Rishi talking. Name these villages after Krishna's pastimes, and bring people to settle here. This land is most worthy to be served. So all the towns, the villages that are now in Vraja, were established by Vajranabha. All the current Vrijvasis, most of them at least, were brought here by Vajranabha after Krishna's disappearance. And all these towns, you see, they were named by Vajranabha, specifically after the pastimes of Krishna that occurred in these places. You should establish your government at these places: Govardhan, Dirgapur, that's Dig, city Dig near Bharatpur, Mathura, Mahavan, and on the great peak of Nandagram. This is where the district capitals are, you know, the sub-district capitals. If you serve carefully the rivers, hills, villages, lakes, ponds, and groves, the citizens will prosper under your rule. You will also feel satisfaction. You should also give all attention to serving this land of eternity, knowledge, and bliss. The places of Krishna's pastimes will manifest to you by my grace. Because how is Vajranabha supposed to find all these places and establish villages? Shandiji says, I'll give you the power. By my grace, you'll find them. There's over 500 villages that were established by Vajranabha. Most of them are mentioned in the Bhakti Ratnakara, in the fifth chapter that describes the Vrajadham parikrama. And most of them are still there. And by perfectly serving this land, dear Vajra, you will be able to meet Uddhava. Uddhava. From him, you and your mothers, the queens, will receive the most confidential knowledge. Having said this, Shandilya left, remembering Krishna. Vishnuratta and Vajra both felt the highest satisfaction. So we got a hint here that we're going to see Uddhava again on the earth. Okay. So you don't have to read it, but we'll read it tomorrow, the last three chapters. Yes? No? He never left. Anyway, we'll read about it. We'll read about it. Yes. Yeah, that's their idea. That Bhakti Yoga, the system, the traditional system of discipline called Bhakti Yoga, is too difficult for Kali Yuga. And therefore, we just simply surrender to the Lord and depend on His mercy. And we do that also. We practice what we call Bhakti Yoga. But our Bhakti Yoga is hear and chant about Krishna and depend on His mercy. Associate with devotees. It's not a complicated system of rules and regulations.
Okay, so beforehand,
rigorous, yeah. Complicated, yeah. It involved especially worship of the deity form. In different ages, it takes different forms. In Sati Yoga, Krishna was worshipped by meditation, by Dhyana Yoga, by Dhyana. In Treta Yuga, He's worshipped by fire sacrifices. That means in Treta Yuga, performing the Vedic fire sacrifices was the process of practicing Krishna consciousness.
And that
means
considered Bhakti Yoga?
Yes. And in Dwarpa Yuga, it's worshipping the deity. In Kali Yuga, it's Nam Sankirtan.
All considered Bhakti
Yoga? Yeah, it's just different methods for different ages. But what? Yeah, the point that they're making in the Sri Sampradaya is that what was appropriate in the previous age is too hard in this age. We agree with that. But they identify it simply as prapatti, surrendering to Krishna. We specify more exactly that it's Nam Sankirtan. How do we take shelter of Krishna? By chanting His names. They have to agree with that because that's stated explicitly in Srimad Bhagavatam so many times. And they accept Srimad Bhagavatam's authority. The Sri Vaishnavas, other Vaishnavas. Not for everybody. Whoever worshipped Krishna worshipped him through bhakti yoga, but there are other people who don't practice. There always are people who don't practice devotional service.
No, the most prominent form is bhakti yoga.
Prominent means what? Bhakti yoga is the most perfect and sublime, but not necessarily prominent in the sense of how many people are doing it. There are more people performing other kinds of yoga. In other ages, bhakti yoga is very rare. Because it's the most difficult yoga. You have to be the most advanced yogi to even begin chanting Krishna's names, worshipping God. You have to become, practice yoga for thousands of years, then you're allowed to begin bhakti yoga. It's only in Kali Yuga that we're given a special dispensation, that even the most fallen people can begin hearing and chanting and worshipping the Lord without any purification. Qualifications. That's just special arrangement, special mercy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Otherwise, bhakti yogis are usually a minority, tiny minority. Well, we can hope that the majority, you mean the majority of the people in the world? Or, well, majority yogis, because there aren't any other bona fide yogis in Kali Yuga. Kali Yuga, all the other yoga systems break down. Only a small handful of people can practice a meditational yoga and Kali Yuga properly. Few. You can go up to the mountains and find a few yogis, but only a few real yogis. But so Bhakti Yoga becomes practically the only working system of yoga in Kali Yuga. Yes? They're preaching other things. They're preaching Karma Kanda, they're preaching Jnana, they're preaching Karma Mishra Bhakti. There are very few preachers of pure bhakti. Very rare. Kali Yuga becomes more prominent. No, because in other ages, mixed systems, intermediate systems, are available. They work. Therefore, they're very prominent. And most of the teachers, most of the gurus are teaching mixed systems or materialistic systems. In other ages, what means of gradual perfection. And it's very rare you find someone teaching the essence. But in Kali Yuga, it's either the essence or nothing. Okay, so it's a very special situation. Yes, ma'am? Yes. Well, those who are bhajan anandis just are concerned with their own bhajan, only, and don't make an effort to preach. But very often, without making a separate effort, they do accomplish preaching just by their personal example. Unless you're hiding in a cave, people are going to see you. And they see what kind of person you are, and they're attracted and they're impressed. Even if you're not making an endeavor to preach, it's recommended. Devotees do what Krishna wants. So Krishna has a particular need. Devotees are eager to fulfill that need according to the situation. So the current situation of the world is there's a great need for preaching. People are suffering in ignorance and confusion. And we've got the cure, and we're not sharing it. So that's, to not preach in the current situation is to be a miser. Especially if you have Krishna consciousness. So it may be in other situations to be a bhajan anandi could have been appropriate, but in the current world situation, it's miserly to be a bhajan anandi. But that's just the particular situation we're in. That the world is suffering so much and out of lack of Krishna consciousness. Was strong enough to create a worldwide society and make hundreds of thousands of devotees, distribute hundreds of millions of books. There must be some potency there. not our potency. Prabhupada is not an ordinary sadhu. That's why he's not the only guru, because he's able to empower his disciples to be gurus. No matter what they are, he can just zap them and empower them. And take people, you know, from the degraded culture and in 2 or 3 weeks send them out as preachers. That's what Prabhupada was doing in the beginning, by special empowerment. Taking all risks, and therefore there were some failures, many failures, but you know, taking risks in battle with Maya. Try to become perfect before doing anything? Is that what you mean?
I mean, you can perform the ritual service and preach the message, the pure message. Because putting something through
your mouth is going to be something. Well, you know, it's not Prabhupada's personal emphasis. To put the emphasis on first become perfect, then preach. Preach and then you'll become perfect. Not that we should neglect sadhana, and perform devotional service passionately and superficially, but Prabhupada put so much emphasis on preaching. So much emphasis. And now he's not visibly present, therefore everything has to change. If this is Prabhupada's movement, we have to follow his mood. Preaching doesn't necessarily mean going out. Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati explained it that way. You can either go out, or you can stay, you know, and write books. He gave that as as a specific counterexample. You know, person who's working on books, he's not going out, but he's preaching. And you can also preach by whatever service you're doing. Pujari, the housewife, can preach. It's a matter of attitude. When the attitude is pure, then it impresses people. Now, unless we're hiding from everybody and nobody ever sees us, but if we have any public presence at all, people see us walking in the street and so on, then that's preaching. Famous example of Jayananda, taking out the garbage, and some person's coming to see this Hare Krishna temple, and he meets the garbage man who starts preaching elevated philosophy to him. And he thinks, boy, if this is, if the garbage man is like this, but these devotees must be. So, just by taking out the garbage, you can do very effective preaching. With the right attitude. Yeah. So, not that we should neglect becoming very Krishna conscious. We should, mamanu smara yujata, remember me and fight. Yes? If we're delivering Krishna, then even if we're imperfect, we may, the mailman is not somebody we want to associate with, but he's bringing us a check in the mail, we're glad to see him. So we deliver Krishna, and then no matter what we are, that's glorious. We should try to deliver Krishna, not our own nonsense. Say what Krishna said, according to our realization, not concoct. That's effective preaching. Preach according to your realization. Pass on what we heard from Prabhupada. And in our lives, live according to Prabhupada's instructions. If we go off, and become modernistic and materialistic, and in neglect of Prabhupada's or defiance of Prabhupada's instructions, then the way we live our lives will not be preaching. And we won't be empowered to preach. We don't have to go out. We don't have to do what looks like preaching. But we do have to live Prabhupada's instructions and according to his vision of what a spiritual life is. We're supposed to be living spiritual life. Can't be living material life and spiritual life both. It's one or the other. Or to the extent that we're still living materialistically, our spiritual life is not very potent. Okay, anything else? One, so we don't end on a negative note. Yeah. Yeah, okay. Okay, then we have to, that's negative vision, to see all the faults and the, you know, the failings. That's natural, but it doesn't, unless we're in a position to do something about it, it doesn't do much good. So better to cultivate somehow a positive outlook. You know, look, these people have come here and they're doing something for Krishna. Not that they, you know, look at all the wrong things that the devotees, especially when you deal with devotees. Non-devotees. You're talking about the rest of the world? Well, also, you should give yourself a break and try to see the positive things in yourself. Yeah. It does, you know, becoming completely discouraged, you know, and giving up is not going to accomplish anything. So, just like Uddhava was talking, you know, I'm a fallen materialist, but I'm confident that the process of hearing and chanting your glories is so powerful that it will deliver me also, despite what I am. You know, the Krishna consciousness is that potent. The association of Vaishnavas is that potent. If I'm allowed to stay in the association of devotees, I'll be saved somehow. So that you should think. Yeah. Yeah. Well, not, but that Shravanam Kirtan, if you want to get rid of egotism, then you should not only chant, but also serve the devotees. You know, if you're neglecting the devotees and you're sitting in a corner chanting, then Krishna won't be so pleased with that. That's, yeah. We can go out and preach, but we should also serve the devotees. Have an attitude of wanting to serve the devotees. If you can't preach, you should want to preach. If you don't have an opportunity to serve, you should want to serve. The wanting is good as the doing. It's the attitude that matters. To get free from egotism, we should want and we should try to serve devotees. Especially if you're some devotee whom you're, something in them you don't like, that's the devotee you should give service to. Yes? That was Narada's instruction to Gopal Kumar, yeah.
And I was thinking, you got to Chaitanya saying that maybe Krishna reminds us of our fallen condition, because he can also remove this past sinful activities or bad condition. And maybe he does remind us so that we develop this.
Okay, but sometimes Maya is also talking in the other ear and telling us, you're useless, why don't you just give this up? Come back to me. So we got to be careful which ear we're listening in. Who's talking to us? Is it Krishna or is it Maya? The way to test, if you're becoming more encouraged to surrender by your discouragement, yeah, then okay. If you're driven to serve more, but if you're driven to stop your service, then you're listening in the wrong ear. Okay, I think we have to stop for now. And then tomorrow we'll try to finish the Bhagavat Mahatmya. Thank you. All glories to Srila Prabhupada, Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai.